Unspoken Lies, written by E.B. Jameson and read by K-Burb. This is a Star Wars fic, rated teen and up audiences, in which no archive warnings apply. It features the relationships between Jango/Obi-Wan, Jango/Miles, and Jango/Obi-Wan/Miles. It is a soulmate AU, with warnings for canon-typical violence. This fic stands as a sequel to K.J. Faeborn's Dangerous Truths.
I've got demons running around in my head, and they feed on insecurities I have. Won't you lay
Chapter 1
healing hands on my chest, that your ritual clean. So
my name is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I'm a Jedi. Obi-Wan doesn't breathe for a moment after the words leave his mouth. He can't. He had to tell them. He knows he had to tell them before this went any further. Miles would carry the lie of Ben on his skin for the rest of his life, and they've both been looking at him like nothing he could say would change their minds, like nothing about him would sway their resolve.
I want to dig into your heart and lay out your every dream,
Jango had said, and
I'll build the rest of our lives with a place for you in it,
Miles had said. And Obi-Wan is new to this whole soulmate thing, but the words hadn't scarred, and honesty given deserves honesty in return. So he told them his name and the truth of who he is, and now he isn't breathing. He doesn't think they are either. He can feel Jango's chest not rising. Pressed against him, pressed against Jango Karking Fett, as he is, and Miles' face is fully in view. Neither of them are moving. Neither of them are speaking. They're both still wearing most of their armor, and Obi-Wan isn't getting much from the Force about their emotional states through the Beskar. Then the fingers that had been gently tracing the scar on his ribs,
name's Jaster, by the way,
shift, twitch, start to move up, across Obi-Wan's bare chest, because he'd let Jango Karking Fett take his shirt off, towards his throat. This isn't Obi-Wan's first war. This isn't the first time someone has put their hands on Obi-Wan with the intent to do harm. This isn't the first time being a Jedi has put Obi-Wan's life in danger. He takes a breath and pushes outwards with the Force. Maybe, Miles thinks as he gets thrown across the room by what feels like a giant invisible hand.
We should have listened when he told us we wouldn't like the answers if we kept pushing.
Miles doesn't like the answers. Miles really, really doesn't like the answers. He doesn't impact the wall as hard as he probably could, given that Ben is Obi-Wan and Obi-Wan is a Kriffing Jetti. Obi-Wan isn't old enough to be a full one, probably one of their. What do they call their apprentices again? Padawans? Padawans. But Miles can feel the strength behind the shove and just as clearly feel the buffer that comes up between his head and the wall. Well, so much for this being a lie, which is what Miles was fervently hoping for the half second before Jango's trained, learned, earned response to the revelation that a Jedi was in the room had him going for a chokehold, and Obi-Wan flung them both off like ragdolls. Jango had probably been hoping for it to be a lie, too, had probably spent that whole half second desperately wishing for the feel of words manifesting on his skin. But it wasn't a lie. Obi-Wan, their soulmate, is a Jedi. And he's running. He's shirtless and running, out the door and across the hall, before either Miles or Jango can pick themselves up from the floor. The door into their rooms swings closed, bouncing lightly off the jam, and Miles would bet anything that Obi-Wan will have Kreese out the window in seconds. Jango staggers to the chair he left his helmet on and jams it onto his head. By the time Miles does the same, Jango is halfway through snarling a set of orders over comms.
Lock the compound down. jetty within the walls. Humanoid male, 20 standard, red hair, black pants, bare feet, bare chest.
Their soulmate. Miles follows Django into the hall, blaster in hand. The two of them don't need words for this, for entering a room that holds at least one enemy. For is Obi-Wan their enemy? He's a Jedi, yes, but he's their soulmate. For covering each other's backs in hostile, is this hostile? Miles crushes the tiny voice in his head that keeps asking questions, that keeps protesting. Maybe Obi-Wan is their soulmate. Maybe this is all some big Jedi trick. Maybe, maybe, maybe. There's no time for maybe. There's Django. Miles is Redur. The future Mandalore, if Miles has anything to say about it. The man who saved his life on Galadron. And then there's the lying Jetty they knew for all of 5 minutes before bringing into their home with the harking leader of the new Mandalorians on his heels. If Miles has to make a choice, that's no choice at all. Obi-Wan doesn't stop to explain. He pushes Satine towards the window, uses the Force when she won't move under her own power, and has them both darting through shadows before alarms start going off. What happened? Satine hisses as they crouch beneath another window one building over, the sound of boots moving fast and weapons being primed echoing in the night. You said this would be safe. You said we could trust them.
I was wrong.
But we don't. I'm a Jedi, Satine, and Jango Fett is a Jedi killer. But he's your, they're your.
I know, Obi-Wan says.
He feels like something is ripping in his chest, and it's not just the broken ribs.
It's not enough.
They have to move, then, to avoid a trio of commandos. And then there's someone patrolling in the next corridor they try, and there's shouting from a few buildings back. And Obi-Wan realized Jango was taking them on a circuitous route when they were brought in, but how criffing big is this compound? There, the gate. Obi-Wan goes first, to draw fire if there's going to be fire. There isn't. He makes it to the gate, locked, of course, but he can already see just where to nudge it with the Force to get it open, without incident, and has just long enough to be grateful for his first bit of luck in what feels like months, when he realizes that the noise from the other end of the compound is getting louder, getting closer, and it's not the sound of unified true Mandalorians hunting down prey. It's the sound of battle. And the only being stupid enough to launch an attack on a true Mandalorian compound in the heart of Keldabe? Obi-Wan force pulls Satine to his side just in time. Most of a Death Watch squad, closely affiliated with the unit Obi-Wan, Jango, and Miles dealt with barely 2 hours prior, if Obi-Wan's reading their armor correctly, comes barreling around the corner, making all haste for the very gate Obi-Wan and Satine are huddled next to. Their progress is somewhat impeded by the person they're dragging with them, a true Mandalorian who is violently wrenching their bodies side to side and lashing out with their legs in an attempt to get free and... Oh, that's Jango. Jango Fett would happily kill Obi-Wan if he got his hands on him again, and the Jedi aren't supposed to take sides in the conflict on Mandalore. Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon were sent here to protect the Kree's family and attempt to broker peace. Death Watch abducting the leader of the true Mandalorian faction is not something Obi-Wan should get involved in.
Jango's not exactly the type to just let his soulmate get hunted by Kirt Zod and do nothing about it,
Miles had said. And the thing is, Obi-Wan isn't that type either. Miles's universe tilts on its axis for the third or fourth time today, depending on how he's counting. 1 second he and Jango are sweeping their rooms, even though it's obvious that Obi-Wan and Kreese did indeed go out the window. And the next, there are carking Death Watch commandos in the halls, and something hits him at the base of his skull while he's distracted, trying to get one of the foundlings to
hide. Please, it's great that you have a knife, Lilik, but you are 8 criffing years old. Yes, I know that's a bad word. It's not your job to fight right now. It's your job to hide.
Veskar helmets are great. Miles's helmet has saved his life more times than he can count. But even the purest Beskar in the galaxy can't make a full-strength strike with the butt of a Galar 15 blaster carbine not suck. He loses a few seconds. Not more than that, he's sure, because Lilik is still there and currently strangling a Death Watch commando with what appears to be the torn-off sleeve of her own sleep shirt. Good kid. Maybe he and Django should move up their adoption timeline. Django. Miles spares another precious minute delivering Lilik to a safe room, where the Ade are being guarded by a small group of older clanspeople who look torn between being antsy to join the main fight and like there isn't a force in existence that could move them from their most sacred of duties, protecting children, before running towards the sound of the battle. From the snatches of conversation happening over the general comms channel linked to his helmet, Death Watch is already on their way out, heading for the main gate. And they have Django. Django is a brutally efficient warrior. Django wipes the floor with the average Death Watch commando. Hells, Django wipes the floor with Miles about half the time they spar. Django can take care of himself, and then some. Django is also Miles' Redor, and just found out that the universe thinks a Jedi is the perfect addition to their lives. Django is, perhaps, not in the best headspace to be breaking himself free of a Death Watch squad before they can spirit him away to one of their camps. If they get him to a camp. There are hundreds of Death Watch camps scattered across Mandalore's surface, and those are just the ones the true Mandalorians know about. Kurt Zod abandons camps, builds new ones, moves to previously abandoned ones all the time, and they're all carking impossible to get to over this battered carcass of a planet. If Death Watch gets Django to one of their camps, the likelihood of Miles ever getting Django back drops off severely. There'd still be some chance, of course. Django Fett is not to be underestimated, even when he's got one foot in the grave. The slavers that took Django and Miles after Galadron had learned that the hard way. But Miles would really prefer not to hang the chances of Django's survival on pure hope. He slows down when he gets close to the gate. There's something happening, some sort of delay that's preventing Death Watch from leaving with Django. Miles can't make out the details, because no one on helmet comms gives a straight sit rep, and barreling into a standoff without all the details is a great way to get people killed, so he comes to a halt at the mouth of an alley that leads to the gate and peeks cautiously around the corner. Django, helmetless, bleeding from a head wound, held at blaster point by no less than 12 Kurt Zod, who don't understand exactly how dead they are once Miles gets his hands on them. 6 of Miles and Django's people, and that's pretty much the entire population of the compound, between them and the ones back with the Ade, in an arc around Death Watch and the still-closed gate. Satine Kryze, cowering mostly out of sight behind a building. Obi-Wan Kenobi, charging into the motionless scene with a war cry. Miles has seen Obi-Wan fight. It might have only lasted a few minutes, but Miles has been trained to assess the tactics, strengths, and weaknesses in both enemies and allies from mere seconds of combat. Before this exact moment, he would have confidently described Obi-Wan's fighting style as fluid, economical, and smart. This is not that. This is Obi-Wan prioritizing speed and ruthlessness. He doesn't have a weapon, doesn't have armor. Doesn't even have a shirt or boots. But he throws himself against Death Watch like he's a true Mandalorian, only a handful of years past his Vertigo 10. More spirit than experience. Like he's willing to die for Django Fett. The other true Mandalorians near the gate are just as confused as Miles, probably because about 3 minutes ago, Django was yelling about a Jetty on the loose, and then Death Watch attacked. And now someone who looks a lot like the Jetty who Django warned about is trying to save Django from Death Watch. They're not firing or moving to get involved in the fray. Neither is Miles, to be fair. He can't tell if him getting involved would help or hurt. Obi-Wan's causing a fair bit of chaos among the Kirzad, chucking himself around with absolutely none of the elegance Miles saw from him earlier. Maybe he's trying to make an opening for someone else to get to Jango. No one shot Jango yet, too busy being entertained and distracted by Obi-Wan's graceless attack, but there are still multiple blasters trained on him. If Miles steps in, too late. It's over. Obi-Wan purposely leaves his side unprotected after a kick, and one of the Death Watch commandos jabs him in the ribs. The broken ribs, Miles remembers. He didn't have a chance to dig up a Bacta injection with the butt end of a blaster, and Obi-Wan goes down in a heap. He's back up on his feet in the next heartbeat, still fighting, but he's slower and obviously favoring his side. The same commando slugs him across the jaw, and Obi-Wan can't seem to get off his knees this time. Obi-Wan spits a mouthful of blood and sneers up at the commando. "Takes 12 of you to handle me and the Mandalore, huh? Pathetic." He speaks perfect Mandoa. Miles's mind absolutely does not go to the Rezzel Nare. Miles also absolutely does not feel a slight stirring in his pants at the sight of Obi-Wan's bloodstained teeth as he holds himself upright on his knees, defiant.
"He's no Mandalore,"
the commando replies.
"Pre Vizsla."
Obi-Wan lets out a string of derogatory expletives about Vizsla that gets cut off by two things, a blaster crashing into his temple, and an explosion from the other side of the compound. There's a scream from the direction of the explosion. High pitch. Young. The Ade. Miles doesn't try for eye contact with Jango, who is clearly struggling to stay conscious and just as perplexed by Obi-Wan pretending to be a true Mandalorian as the rest of them. There's no heartfelt goodbye traded in a lingering gaze, no wordless promise that Miles will tear the entire damn planet apart to find him. Jango would string Miles up by his balls if he found out Miles prioritized a chance to free him, or worse, 2 seconds of sappy romantic bullshit over helping children. Miles barks an order across helmet comms. As one, he and the other true Mandalorians turn and race through the compound. It's nearly an hour before he can return to the gate. Nearly an hour of rooting out and disposing of the second, smaller squad of infiltrators, of making sure all the Ade are okay, of getting the most severely injured to medics. None of Miles's people are dead, which is a criffing miracle, but Satine Kryze is standing just inside the blown-apart gate, alone. No Death Watch, no Jango, no Obi-Wan. Miles had 2 soulmates within arm's reach just a few hours ago, and now...
"It seems that our interests may align for once," Kryze says.
She's staring out the open gate into Kaldabe, looking shaken and fragile, and for a second, Miles hates her. Not for what she represents, not for what she's trying to do to their culture, but for what she didn't do here. She didn't help protect the Ade. She didn't go after Obi-Wan, who she's supposed to. Supposed to...
"I love her,"
Ben Obi-Wan had said. And Miles still hasn't had a chance to check his skin to see if that was a lie, but he knows that it's not love, if one of you hides in the shadows while the other puts his life on the line. Not any type of love that Miles respects, anyway.
"Fuck you, Duchess,"
Miles says, and goes to get the people he loves to safety.